This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's April the 20th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss the cash grain market today with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator, located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the agricultural trade talks in Geneva may be bumped up to a higher level of the WTO. Things are not going well in the negotiations. And there is a new proposal from Japan to create a 16-nation free trade zone in Asia. And that likely will not be good for the United States. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and check in with meteorologist Peter Levitt. He'll give us the latest on the growing seasons here in the U.S. and around the globe. Stay with us for this Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Thursday afternoon, futures in the May contract for the hard red winter wheat settled at $4.45 a bushel. They were down a penny and three quarters today. From Chicago, the May wheat settled $3.53, down a penny and three quarters as well. And the harvest month July soft red winter wheat settled at $3.66 and a quarter. It was off a penny and a half for the day. Corn pit now, May futures $2.35 and three quarters. Settlement price down 2 and three quarters. July at $2.47 and a half, off 2 and a half. And the SEPs, $2.57 and a half, were down 2 and a quarter. December contract in the corn pit in Chicago, $2.69 and a half today. The settlement down 2 and a half cents. Soy complex, May beans, $5.71 and a quarter. They were down 2 and three quarters today. July futures off 2 and a half cents at $5.85 and a quarter. The August down a penny and three quarters at $5.91 and a quarter. And the November beans at $6.05 and a quarter were down 2 and a quarter. May bean meal at $1.72.60, off $2.80 today. May bean oil for the products at $24.14. up 25. From the Mercantile Exchange, nearby April feeder cattle at 103.10, off 77 and a half cents. April live cattle at 82.17 and a half were down 65 cents for the day, and the May lean hogs settled 55 higher at $65.05 a hundredweight. Crude oil, the May contract at 71.70, now down 47 cents for the day. The dollar at 88.28, up 47. The gold at 619.80, down 12.80, and the silver futures trading 12.51. They were down $1.989 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and maybe a little bit at the outside markets as well, is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Dan, tell me about the marketplace and what you've seen in the way of the changing, if there has been at all, of the marketplace over the last week in terms of the technicals.
Well, I think fundamentally here, or at least what the market is trading on corn and soybeans, is principally weather, planting pace, worrying about whether or not the market, corn market, maybe went high enough here over the last couple of weeks to buy any additional acres, and then it has to worry about, if it did, whether or not those additional acres will be planted in a timely manner, and, you know, what magnitude of that is, and so... that they're kind of working that. The wheat market is working it on again, off again. Weather forecast or rain forecast for the southern plains is on and then it's off. I think the noon maps here indicated that it was probably a little drier than this morning, and corn was, the forecast was probably a little wetter than what this morning's maps was. So that kind of gave both corn and wheat a chance at rallying back to near unchanged, even fractionally higher there for a little bit over the noon hour, but at the end of the day, we fell back. I would say the chart picture on corn is not good. it kind of indicates that we could be putting in a top. I look at the December corn option or December contract and kind of feel that there's kind of an M formation or double top formation in that chart. You look at your May and July contracts, we don't quite have a double top, but what we've got is a failed test of the high, and then we move down underneath last week's low. So the corn market kind of looks like it could be making a top. The other angle of it could be maybe a flag formation to go another 20 higher if weather forecasts turn wet here over the next over the weekend, let's say, and we're not going to see a lot of playing activity take place by May 1. So it's pretty much, I think corn's at a point here where it can top. If not, you go 20 higher. And it's kind of like where we were last year. Once you get into the 270s, that's a spot that historically has been a place that the market could top. If not, then it moves on up into the 290s, and then it goes to the 212 or 312s and just keeps going forward.
Has your cash advice added additional sales over the last week?
No, we have not. Depending upon which service you're following, whether the printed service or the electronic service, you're between 30 and 40%.
Tell me about Chicago in just a bit. You suggested that traders in Chicago will be looking to buy acres, and they'll stop when they think they've got them purchased. How do they do that? Do they listen to the radio station and figure out that you've said, hey, they bought an acres?
Yeah, they listen to you, Todd, to see whether or not corn planters are rolling.
I was thinking you could tell them that they haven't bought the acres yet.
No, I mean, that's the chatter among the trade. I mean, and farmers are part of that trade. You're part of the trade. I'm part of the trade. Everybody's part of the trade that we talk about commodity markets. Now, I do think there's a general belief out there that USDA is too low on their number, and I think that's probably maybe one reason why it hasn't been quite as powerful as you would think at first blush, because that 78 million planted acres is flat bullish. I mean, you can just pencil out any kind of yield scenario, and the balance sheet just looks tight. If the 10.5 demand or 11.5 billion bushel demand is realized out there, and of course everybody's cranked on about the energy component of corn with ethanol production and the price of crude oil at 70. But you know, a lot of things can change between now and then. Like I tell a lot of tell producers is that we don't have to work the demand side of the equation of this market until next fall. I mean, near term here, we've got old crop supplies. If the crop gets planted, yeah, we can argue about acres, but we won't know the final number until end of June. So there's a lot of water going underneath the bridge. So the demand part of this market can wait till after the crop has been made before it actually begins and takes hold and takes prices higher. But in the near term here, it's worrying about, you know, whether or not the acres will get planted and whether or not we'll buy additional. But I think most people feel that that number's grew. It probably even grew before USDA came out, because the USDA, that's supposedly as of a March 1 survey number. Corn prices rallied during the month of March. So, you know, most people feel that that number's going to grow.
How far along on old crop cash corn sales are you?
We're right at 80% to 90%, depending upon which service you're following. And, you know, it's been our goal to be fairly aggressive here by May 1 or May 10th. So we are in this window in here that we're looking to get fairly aggressive on old crop inventory, pretty well finish up the sales, and lay into the new crop in a meaningful way anyway.
Is that because you're fearful that there is a fairly large supply still in the countryside and it will all come out?
Well, a lot of it is that 9 out of 10 people are bullish corn. you know, the corn market is priced a lot of that bullishness in. Like I said, we don't have to worry about running out of corn near term here. And there's always opportunities to come in and replace that those sales or protect those sales with futures and or options. But now on soybeans, I think a guy can probably begin to start getting friendly to soybeans. I think The fundamentals, as in corn, no matter which way, whatever yield you put on corn, it looks bullish with the acres that USDA issued. The beans, regardless of what yield you put on those acres, things still look bearish, the beans. So the beans look as bearish as the corn looks as bullish. So, you know, and about 9 out of 10 people probably bearish soybeans. So I think, you know, soybean action's actually looking a little better since I last talked to you, or it's improved here. We haven't confirmed any trend shifts yet. I think you still have to take November futures. You got to kind of clear the 610 area. I think if you begin to clear 610, then you've at least stopped the downtrend and shifting the market to something more sideways or sideways to higher.
I have another question on the corn market. If you're a guy that has not sold, or you're not up to 80%, say you only sold 25 or 30% of your old crop corn, but you did manage to get 40 to 45 cents on your LDP last fall, and you've got, what, I think, was it 29 cents for the direct payment, and cash price in Central Illinois is about $2.20 a bushel. If you can get $2.90 to $3 for old crop corn in total, should you go ahead and market it?
Well, you know, I would say if he hasn't marketed his corn by now, he's probably pretty tough.
well, there are a lot of them that will be pretty tough out there, but I'm wondering whether they ought to pull the trigger at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, but farmers ain't going to look at it that way, Todd.
Yeah, I know.
No, LDP money, something else. That's farm program money, and then the direct payment is farm program. That's not income money. So farmers are still going to look at their individual cash bid per bushel, and but you do have pretty strong cash bids at these levels, and I think seasonally we're entering a time window that if the corn crop goes ahead, gets planted, and everything looks good by June 1, this old crop market could fall apart fairly quickly because we do have a pretty hefty carry over to get rolled into the marketing loan or rolled out of the marketing loan and into the pipeline late summer. So, yeah, I would, if I was someone that owned a lot of inventory, I'd definitely be wanting to peel it out here, maybe divide whatever you have up in three or four increments, peel out one each week while corn planting's working in here.
Dan, I appreciate you being with us today.
You're welcome.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, joins us on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolandAgriEnergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, Ag meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather. Our own Mike Sola forecast for the two-state region tonight calls for in the southern and central parts of Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy skies. Some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, though, there. Elsewhere, it'll be clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 42 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in deep southern Indiana. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms, most numerous in the south. Highs tomorrow from 62 in northwestern Illinois to 73 in eastern Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment to take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, sources in Geneva say negotiators are discouraged over the lack of progress this week in Doha Round talks that are the last on agriculture before an April 30th deadline for a detailed agreement. It appears that agricultural discussions will be bumped up to the higher-level WTO Trade Negotiations Committee and the heads of delegations. The president of the Corn Refiners Association, Audra Erickson, says WTO Director General Pascal Lamy should step in and write a final version for Doha consideration.
WTO Director General Lamy is a highly skilled negotiator. He's had years of experience. He knows where the pressure points are for the U.S., and he knows what the EU can ultimately agree to. That, coupled with his desire to see this deal done and his hours spent trying to coddle the developing countries into agreeing to further concessions, I think he has the skills that can bring a text together just on the nexus of issues that are stymieing the negotiators today and enable them to save face and work it out in such a way that they can all sing from the mountaintops that this is a good approach.
There has been some progress on food aid this week in Geneva, but the key issue on formulas for reduction of tariffs and subsidies remains a major stumbling block. The U.S. Ambassador to Japan, Thomas Schiffer, is expressing concern about a proposal by Japan's trade minister to create a 16-nation free trade zone in Asia. Schiffer says it could damage U.S. interests in the region. Japan's economy, trade, and industry minister earlier this month proposed that Japan should ask the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, China, South Korea, India, Australia, and New Zealand to consider launching regional FTA talks in 2008. If realized, the region-wide FTA could rival the European Union and the North American Free Trade Agreement consisting of the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Crude oil prices have topped $71 a barrel this week, and USDA chief economist Keith Collins says that could translate into huge increases for farm fuels, lubricants, and fertilizer.
For 2006, we've been saying that we expect farmers to spend about $14 billion, for example, on fertilizer. That's up from about $13 billion last year and $11 billion the year before, so steady increases. For fuels and oils, nearly $13 billion are expected in 2006, and that compares with about $8 billion 2 years ago.
Collins says that does not include the kind of energy spikes experienced over the last few weeks. Collins says rapid economic growth in China and India are also leading to higher crude oil prices. And he says producers more than ever before need to have a marketing plan for energy.
There's a range of things producers can do. The first thing they can do is take advantage of variability in energy prices by trying to price ahead, forward price, catch prices when they're low, store energy, and so on. As prices persist at higher levels, those options disappear. And so then it becomes actual changes in input use.
Among the options, according to Collins, changing crop rotation, reducing fertilizer and pesticides use, and saving on fuel and electricity. LLC is announcing plans to build a $52 million biodiesel production facility near Marcus, Iowa. The plant will produce 30 million gallons of biodiesel annually from soybeans, crude soy oil, corn oil, and animal fats. Cherokee Area Economic Development Director Mark Bushkamp says the plant will run on pelletized biomass as a hedge against energy costs.
Well, that's one of the niches that we believe we have at this plant to control our energy costs in the production. We are contracting with Cherokee Solid Waste Landfill Commission, and they are going to be manufacturing a solid fuel pellet made from municipal waste. Obviously, the recyclables and the toxins, the ferrous metals, the PVC plastics, the electronics are all removed by a separation process. What's left is paper, cardboard, and some foodstuffs that's compressed into a pellet which has a BTU value of about 7,500 BTUs.
The plant will be operational in 2007. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, in today's Listener Opinion Forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says the migrant labor force is important to U.S. agricultural interest and U.S. food security.
Spring is here, which means one thing to a farmer. It's time to revisit our fields and our orchards in preparation for the growing season ahead. For fruit and vegetable growers, however, spring thoughts of planting and nurturing may be displaced by concerns about who will help harvest this year's bounty. Of all major sectors of the U.S. economy, agriculture is the most dependent on the migrant labor force. And if our lawmakers don't act quickly, billions of dollars worth of agricultural production could soon slip through our fingers and across our borders. U.S. agriculture hires about 1 million workers each year for jobs that most Americans are unwilling to do. Agriculture would face dire consequences if we were to lose our guest labor workforce. According to the recent American Farm Bureau economic study, between $5 billion and $9 billion in annual U.S. production would be lost to foreign competitors. Net farm income for the rest of agriculture would also decline by as much as $5 billion annually. In short, America would be sending its fruit and vegetable sector across the border. Let me put it like this. Would you prefer to eat food produced on American soil by migrant workers, or would you rather eat food produced on foreign soil by the same workers? It's that simple. Many opponents of migrant labor say we should close our border for security reasons. But let me argue that America will not be safer if the result of closing our borders is to send U.S. production of our fruits and vegetables abroad. The successful production and marketing of fruits, vegetables, and other specialty crops hinges greatly on quality and worker productivity. Further, making sure American consumers have a safe and abundant domestic supply of fruits, vegetables, and other foods is essential to our national interest. Think about that the next time you take a bite out of a California-grown strawberry or a pie made from apples produced in Washington State, because nothing else in the world comes close. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus's comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing, located at the Elevator in Lexington, Illinois, now joins us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers in your area moving today in terms of field work?
No, still not much going on up here. There's, you know, spots around within a 50-mile radius where there's a few guys out scratching around or planting, but very few and far between up here.
Are they getting itchy?
Yeah, I think guys would definitely like to have it in by the end of next week, you know. That's still pretty timely planting if they can do that. And it looks like if it doesn't rain much here over the next 24, 36 hours, they should be able to get that going.
How's the local basis been holding up with the ups and the downs in the markets this week?
Well, the corn basis has been pretty steady, I guess, is the best way to put it. And I think some of that is because we have had this delay in planting, and there's probably that's given guys an opportunity to deliver some grain and sell some grain that maybe wouldn't have normally gotten sold till later, you know, after planting. So that's kind of kept a little bit of a lid on the corn basis. The bean basis has been continuing to improve, and the river has, you know, barge freight dropped again. More water, you can get more on the barges, so the freight's a little bit less, and that's helped improve the river basis.
And your bids for the day are?
On cash corn, 215, cash beans, 544.
We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons to take a look at the cash grain market. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with ag meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois' unemployment rate edged up to 5.1% in March, but the Illinois Department of Employment Security says large temporary layoffs in the manufacturing industry led to the increase. The Illinois Supreme Court says a man whose death sentence was commuted to life in prison can't be sentenced to death again. Richard Morris's 1995 conviction for murder, vehicular hijacking, and kidnapping was on appeal when then-Governor George Ryan commuted the sentences of everyone on death row in 2003. Ground is being broken today for a $135 million biofuels plant in the small northern Indiana town of Claypool. The plant will convert soybeans into diesel fuel. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says it's a big part of the state's plan to become a major producer of renewable fuels. The first head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency says it's time for America to get serious about reducing greenhouse gas emissions because global warming is real. Indiana native William Ruckelshaus told a symposium audience at an Indiana University campus yesterday that the U.S. should take the lead in measures to cut fossil fuel emissions. He says if the U.S. doesn't act, the rest of the world may not either. The Indiana State Teachers Association is filing suit to force the state to provide more money to public schools. The ISTA says the state isn't adequately funding schools so they can meet state-mandated standards and performance goals. Indiana state officials say they haven't seen details of the suit. New TV ads from Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich's reelection campaign use challenger Judy Bar Topinka's words against her. One ad highlights the Republican Topinka's opposition to an assault weapons ban. Another showcases Topinka's description of Blagojevich's proposed increase in the minimum wage as a giveaway program. Better-than-expected earnings and strong sales have boosted Illinois Tool Works stock to an all-time high. Shares in the Glenview-based automotive parts maker topped $100 on the New York Stock Exchange for the first time today. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. On this Thursday afternoon, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. We're joined now to take a complete look at the agricultural weather by Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about these rain showers I'm looking at on the radar in central Texas. Will they manage to keep up with the hard red winter wheat crop as it progresses upwards into the Midwest?
I'm afraid not. Hard red winter wheat is where the problem is. Let me briefly summarize the weather across your region, which looks fairly favorable. Showers moving eastward in the eastern Corn Belt today. Chance of a few more showers tomorrow night and Saturday. And then on Tuesday is the next batch of showers, which looks fairly sizable. So a fairly dry period that ought to let corn progress move ahead. It's been delayed by some wet weather in a few spots.
Thank you much.
But back to that area of question, and we're really concerned about this area, and we're a little mystified by what we hear in some of the forecasts. It has been dry in the Southern Plains hard winter wheat belt, principally from Kansas southward through Oklahoma and Texas, where those southern areas have been extremely dry since late last fall. Aggravating the dryness in the last several weeks has been some well above normal temperatures, with record high temperatures reported here and there, and some triple digit numbers in parts of southern Kansas into Oklahoma and Texas. All in all, the crop appearance right now is having a relatively good stand, at least in Kansas. The stands are poor as you get down to Oklahoma and Texas. But the wheat is short, and the crop is being forced into early maturation and is heading out on short straw, as we say, 7 to 9 inch wheat that's producing heads and heading earlier. And we're a little bit mystified by the talk we keep hearing about showers coming into that area and helping to bail things out. We think that the showers will have to come very soon to help with this crop running so far ahead of schedule. And at the same time, we don't see that in the actual weather predictions that we're looking at. We look to see dry weather through this weekend with a chance of some showers maybe around Monday or Tuesday, but mostly in northern Kansas. And those really dry areas from the southern two-thirds of Kansas on southward, and abnormally dry in terms of the fact that they usually get a lot more moisture in south-central Kansas. It's been very dry there since early November. They're had less than 4 inches of rain in the south-central district of Kansas, and that would put it in the low five on record going back 100 years, and that does not equate to good prospects. So that's the big story. We think there is a problem in there. We're a little bit puzzled by the optimistic reports that rain will come and bail them out really soon. We don't see that in the short-range forecast.
And then just to double-check, here in the Midwest, it looks like it will dry out just a bit until next Tuesday and the plant
is dry. Yeah, Monday through Iowa, Tuesday, Illinois, and maybe some good showers in central Illinois, but it'll be dry through the weekend. We don't look for much in the way of activity tomorrow with the air dry, even though it's a cooler air and unstable. And that should let things dry down generally and at least get some field work moving ahead. And the western Corn Belt looks drier, as a matter of fact, through that period. So we think we'll see some progress there on corn planting.
We appreciate you being with us, Pete.
Mm-hmm, my pleasure.
Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Thursday afternoons. Hey, be sure to visit our website at WILLAG.org. There you can pick up the analysis that you heard today, both the cash grain and the futures analysis from the Closing Market Report, and the opening and pre-opening market report analysis, along with the weather that we just heard from Pete Levitt, and many other items. That's all on WILLAG.org. Just visit that website. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3751. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, and equal housing lender.